It's Air Talk in a beautiful Southern California day. Do you find, as I do, that that lifts your spirits? I do feel better on days that are sunny, clear, and gorgeous, just like today. We're going to find out why in just a couple of minutes with psychiatrist Dr. John Sharp of the Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. But first, I'm joined by Dr. Pat Morrison, who's going to fill us in on what she has coming
Larry, up. Larry, we're indoors all the time. How do we know what the weather is?
That's good point.
Well, we're talking with Police Chief Charlie Beck today for Ask the Chief. A lot of news about the low crime rate. We may try to ask him about guns in schools, too, an issue of great concern. What about that Comcast-NBC merger deal?
Big deal.
There's said to be some protections in that for consumers.
But just for 7 years, I think.
Well, yeah, by 7 years, we'll have forgotten the whole thing. And there'll be some other technology that will supersede this one. And, of course, Congress voting on the repeal of the health care bill, looking at the back and forth on the he said, she said. What's the real factual basis for the cost and the effect in the long term?
All right, a lot that's jammed into 2 hours starting at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Pat Morrison, After the World, here on 89.3 KPCC. We'll be listening then, Pat. Well, as I mentioned, Dr. John Sharp with me. He's both at the Geffen School of Medicine, UCLA, as well as on the medical staff at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and at Harvard Medical School. He's a professor as well. He's both a psychiatrist and neuropsychiatrist. And his new book, The Emotional Calendar, looks at seasonal influences and milestones and the need for us to better understand what some of those milestones and seasonal influences are in our mental health and processes. Doctor, thank you for joining us on Air Talk.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
So how much research has been done on understanding how we psychologically respond to either milestone events that come up on an annual basis or simple seasonal changes?
You know, a lot of research has been done, and it's actually splintered around. I had to look far and wide to put it together when I was writing The Emotional Calendar. There used to be an old society called chronobiologists who would study things like receptor levels in animals and people too, and they were kind of a far-fetched group. And when I was trying to figure out really what we can say about the science of seasonality, I had to take a look at trends all around the world to see what's really influencing us so that you can make sense of how you're feeling throughout the different seasons of the year.
Now, with the onset of winter, we always get these stories about sad seasonal affective disorder and how people respond negatively to darker times of year, colder times of year. Has much of the research come from looking at those who are dealing with sad?
Yes, you know, that's the tip of the iceberg, really, and that's a perfect place to start off. People think the emotional calendar is really all about the effect of the long winter nights, the lack of sunlight. And that actually is the etiology of seasonal affective disorder. The farther away you get from the equator, you know, north and south, the greater the incidence of SAD. But there are cultures that are kind of resilient to it. And so when you take a look, for example, at the people of Tromsø, Norway, which is one of the gateway cities to the Arctic Circle, the incidence of SAD is actually lower than it is throughout the state of Maine. There seems to be some kind of resiliency and determination to make a like festival of lights and to kind of find a way to support one another through these darker times.
So you think it's because they acknowledge it and are doing something about it?
Awareness counts, man. That really is the truth. You know, when you take into account what's affecting you, when you become more aware of what's happening, you know, you can find a way to deal with it better. Buddha said, if you don't like how you're feeling, draw a bigger circle around it. You know, take more into consideration, and that understanding really is your best starting point.
Well, and you begin the book with a personal account of, you know, where you are in the summer at your family home in New England, and how the beginning of the summer, you're raring to go, you're upbeat, you're excited about it, how you weren't even aware of how things change in the final 2 weeks of your summer vacation.
It had to be pointed out to me that I was a grump, that I was not being a good host. It was the last week of August, and I was all ready to sharpen my pencils and get all set for the classes that I was expected to be teaching in the next week or two. And my cousin, who came out only 1 week of vacation she got, it was the last week of August, was renting bikes and going out for ice cream after dinner. But when I felt that cold wind at the end of the day, you know, the tickle of autumn starting, I didn't want to be there.
Bad association.
For me. And for her, it was just fine. So you ought to realize that those associations are kind of involuntary. We're conditioned through our experience. So you ought to know how you're affected when you feel the crunch of wet leaves under you, or if you go visit the snow in Southern California and you find yourself, you know, getting a look at the light and the feel of those cold days. You just need to start with how you're being affected, but you don't have to be passive, because you can determine to create your own associations. You can make positive memories. You can put routines into your life so that season by season, you can be happier and more fulfilled.
You know, one of the things I was a little skeptical of, you know, given all the factors that go into our psychological makeup, I would have thought seasons were way down the list. Even milestones. I mean, I know some people have strong responses to birthdays or anniversaries, the onset of school. But you make the point that really it in many cases is a prime factor in a person's psychological orientation. So how does this, in some cases, move past childhood events or other things that you would more commonly point to as having a psychological impact?
You know, it's a great question. And I think the answer rests on the fact that this is all about survival. This has to do with our animal nature, with our human essence, if you want. But it really comes down to survival. So we are incredibly sensitive observers of what's happening around us. And any sensory association to how we feel, if we're feeling happy or sad, if there's a threat particularly, is going to be registered in our brains. We know now from brain science, brain circuitry, that the hippocampus is a storage unit, which is immensely strong and will put together for us a reference point so that we can know that those sights or sounds or smells or tastes are going to either be okay or not okay for us as we re-experience them. So starting with that, you can then kind of take charge and you can determine for yourself whether something that maybe was a big deal in childhood still needs to be a big deal for you now. You can get over, for example, a loss or something that was terribly exciting or threatening just by understanding how you were feeling at that time and recognizing that you now have the power to create a different experience for yourself presently and in the future.
We're talking with Dr. John Sharp. He teaches both at UCLA's Geffen School of Medicine as well as Harvard Medical School. He's author of The Emotional Calendar, Understanding Seasonal Influences and Milestones to Become Happier, More Fulfilled, and in Control of Your Life. He also sees patients on both coasts as well with a clinical practice. So you use a number of case studies from your own patients that are included here. Share one that you think is indicative of someone who's successfully come to understand how season has an effect on his or her life and then has dealt with it.
Absolutely. You know, Emma, who's a patient of mine who I've been working with for now several years, is a college student now. She met me when she was in prep school outside of Boston, and she was really down in the winter. She was having a hard time standing her own ground in the intense society of high school girls. She felt picked on and ostracized and out of it. It turned out we had to really think through all the different influences that were affecting Emma. Partly it was the lack of light in the winter. She has SAD. Partly it was a kind of inner insecurity that she had that was being brought out by the lack of light so that it became intolerable. And partly it was because a boyfriend of hers broke up with her on Christmas and she realized afterwards that she'd essentially been used by him for sex, which she thought was because he loved her. So when I met poor Emma, who really is a sweetheart, we had to, first of all, tease these influences apart, identify them, and then help her come to terms with each one. She's now at an elite college, and she feels incredibly good about herself. And to your point, it starts with the understanding. It definitely, in her case, required some therapy, required a light box to treat the lack of sunlight affecting her in the winter. And it also required her having the confidence in herself through our relationship to be able to form some positive relationships and some new experiences that now she can look back to so that the fall isn't always a harbinger of such a unhappy time.
So I guess the sort of conventional view of Emma would be, well, the huge events are the dealing with depression, at least in part environmentally caused by these bad prep school experiences, being used by the boyfriend, that those are sort of the clear identified problems. But the fact that she's at far greater risk with the onset of winter as these things are magnified, if you don't treat that, then you're not getting the whole problem.
Exactly. It was kind of a perfect storm for her, and we had to take a look at each of the influences. But, you know, what you're saying, I just want to underscore, is so true, Larry. You can create new experiences for yourself, and that's a way to get over things. For example, I was talking to a writer the other day whose mother was bipolar and had lost control of herself one Christmas. So she was out of the country, and all of a sudden she was really off the deep end. And my writer friend said it just made for the most harrowing of times for her, and every Christmas has been so worrisome for her, not because her mother's bad anymore, but because it just reminds her of it. So her boyfriend got on his knee and proposed to her on Christmas Eve. And she looked down on him and said, "What the heck are you doing?" And he said, "Honey, I'm rebranding Christmas."
Well, it's a big act. Not many people would go to that extreme to rebrand. Presumably, he was going to propose anyway. So,
and I think he had a sense it was going to be a positive thing for her.
That's great. The emotional calendar, understanding seasonal influences and milestones, become happier, more fulfilled, in control of your life. We're joined by psychiatrist Dr. John Sharp of UCLA and Harvard. Our phone line's open if you'd like to ask questions about this. Perhaps this really connects with you. You're someone who feels a variation related to the seasons, to weather patterns, to life events that, as they come up on your calendar, hit you particularly hard. And maybe because, you know, you go through it, you get past the crisis, you even block it out. You forget about it till it comes around again in the cycle, and here it is dropped in your life, and you have to deal with it. 866-893-KPCC, or you can share your comment or question on the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. Now, I wonder if you find a fair number of your patients who, as part of their coping mechanisms, have kind of gone to that out of sight, out of mind. You know, they get past the crisis, sort of limp through it, and then don't deal with it, only to have it come back again.
Re-triggered by our senses. It's absolutely true. You know, there's almost too much for us to be conscious of, all the different factors that may influence how we're thinking and feeling all the time. So we are on essentially autopilot a lot. You know, it's like driving on the highway and not seeing so clearly what's happening until you reach your exit. You're functioning in a very complicated way, but it's not all conscious. It's not deep unconscious like you need a Freudian excavator. It's just off to the sides of our consciousness, and then it can come slamming in and surprise you because you just weren't aware it was there.
Do you ever, when it comes to seasonal influences, recommend that people relocate, that they move to a place that the seasons are different or less intense?
Yes, you know, it does make sense. It's not an easy thing for people to do, although some people are excited about the idea. You know, it's a pretty serious thing. When a psychiatrist, for example, suggests, you know, "I think you really ought to work in a different profession," or "I'm not so sure that it makes sense for you to have more children," or "Maybe it makes sense for you to actually leave this town and go to the Southwest or go to Florida," it's a big responsibility to take very seriously and think through very carefully. But sometimes it makes sense. One of the patients of mine, who is named Brian in the book, did just that. He left the Northeast because there were too many triggers for him. It was just too difficult for him to kind of fight and overcome these forces that were preying upon him year after year. He's a very sensitive man. He's doing very well now in the Southwest. He visits Boston briefly. He visits where he wants to be, but he knows he can get out of there and be in a place with light and comfort and safety, which is a new positive experience for him.
Now, are people highly adaptable, though? I'm curious. You know, for myself, I love the Pacific Northwest. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. I couldn't see myself living there because to me, it does hit me when it's overcast, when it's drizzling a lot. I like sun. I like blue sky. But would I probably have, if I had to move to Seattle, is that adapt? Do most people, are they able to just overcome that?
Well, most people survive, but they may not be happy in the way that they're used to. They may not find things easy and uplifting in the way that they're used to. So if you're a sunny guy, you know, from Southern California, you're enjoying the sun, you know, going up to Seattle would be hard. Can I just say one funny thing?
Is that
most the really great seasonal affective disorder research comes out of San Diego. And the reason is because the researchers can publish all they want. They don't have many patients to get in their way. So they take field trips to Seattle and Rochester, New York, places with cloudy days galore, and then they go back to sunny Southern California and write it all up.
Very, very funny. We're talking with Dr. John Sharp of UCLA and Harvard Schools of Medicine, 866-893-KPCC. Sandra says, "I live in Palmdale. Too much sun here. Never enough clouds and rains. I can't wait to retire and move. Maybe I'll look at northern Alaska." That's Sandra writing on the Air Talk page at KPCC.
And may I just say, she may have something that I identify in the book as reverse seasonal affective disorder. There are people who actually suffer from having too much sun. They don't feel like they can ever relax, take it easy, clean their closet, pull up the covers, watch some old TV. They always feel like they should be out, go, go, going. And sometimes it can make you feel kind of fuzzy-headed and unfocused.
So what is the evolutionary reason that we have such a strong response to seasons? Is it functional at a certain level?
You know, it is functional at a certain level. I mean, on a very base level, you can understand how, you know, when the sun's out and it's warmer, you know, here we are, we can go out of our caves and run around and take care of what we need to do in the world. And then when it's cold and dark and rainy, we stay in and protect ourselves. So it starts off, you know, in a very elemental, very fundamental way. It's just that it gets very elaborate in our minds because our minds are so well connected to all of our sensory experiences. And our conditioning through experience, you know, really means a lot. So think about it in terms of three things. The external forces that you're affected by, like light and temperature. Two is the cultural events that are going on in your life and to the extent you buy into them. You know, we just came through Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's. What does that mean to you? You have to ask yourself, to what extent am I going to be affected and how so? And then there's conditioning through experience, what you've been through in your life at these times. So if you think about it in those three realms, external factors, cultural factors, and personal milestones, and if you just look ahead, season by season, you know, even month by month, you can really predict how you're likely to feel, and you can chart a better course throughout the seasons of your life.
And you typically, when you're seeing patients for this, use cognitive therapy. Is that the prime method for helping people break through on this?
Mindfulness-based stress reduction and cognitive behavioral therapy are two tried-and-true approaches. I'm very relationship-oriented, so I'd have a very active problem-solving attempt, but it's really based on awareness, trying to get someone to understand more and then be able to deal more effectively, more affirmatively, more assertively in a way that's going to help them.
So mindfulness, I think of meditation as a part of that. Is that something you prescribe?
Absolutely. Becoming more aware. You know, any psychiatrist in his right or her right mind these days is prescribing things like yoga and mindfulness.
Exercise.
Get enough sunlight, eat well. You know, taking especially good care of yourself is always a good idea. And I think the emotional calendar gives you a heads up on what that means season by season.
John, thank you so much for being with us. Fascinating. Really appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Dr. John Sharp of UCLA, Harvard Medical School. He also sees patients on both coasts. He's both a psychiatrist and neuropsychiatrist. His book, The Emotional Calendar, Understanding Seasonal Influences and Milestones to Become Happier, More Fulfilled, and in Control of Your Life. I want to let you know I'll be blogging a little bit later today at kpcc.org. Always invite you to check that out as I share thoughts about what's going on with the program. And of course, we'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 10 here on 89.3 KPCC. We invite you to become a fan on Facebook and to follow us at AirTalk on Twitter so that you can have conversation during the program with producer Karen Fritchie, and also make sure that you get all the extra information about what's going on in the program. And every one of our segments on AirTalk enables your feedback 24 hours a day on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Have a great sunny afternoon. Keep your spirits up. The world is next. Then Pat Morrison at 1 o'clock with LAPD Chief Charlie Beck.